accession number 11377, reel 23.
Mr. W. Bateman, reel 23. When you moved to Nijmegen, Mr. Bateman, what were the conditions like in which you were living?
Well, the later conditions were good because the villages in what they call on these pagoda missions. It was like from the these Java mission huts, you know. And they were all like Chinese designed, you know. And the conditions were good. It was more like a schoolroom. There was schools, because there was different rooms and everything. But I can't remember. I can only remember our own platoon and the headquarters platoon. But as far as the rifle companies, I can't. I don't know whereabouts they were billeted. And the conditions were good. The we slept on the floor, and we had straw palliasses. Somebody had filled them, and we got a straw palliasse, and we had two of our own blankets we used to carry with us. And the food was quite good. There was we had no proper dining. I can't remember a dining room. I know we went to they had the cooking facilities, and we used to go and collect our own in our own mess tins. Mm. And the toilet system and the washing system was quite all right. There was wash basins, and there was flush toilets. And then, as far as that, we could, if we wanted to, we could go into Nijmegen, but there was nothing much down in Nijmegen itself, just through the day. But we were only there a couple of days, I think. And then we got orders to move across the bridge. And that's when I went into the Lieutenant Colonel Moggs' car. It was a Hillman. And I went in with him and his batman, and he said his batman and his driver, I don't know whether his batman was driver or what, but he said, I'm going to drive it. So off we set off, like, and he says, now, he says, well, we've got toward near the bridge, because he said, put a bomb through the beginning of the bridge, and the engineers had thrown a Bailey bridge across. So he says, hang on to your seats, he says, because we're going to go, because he says the judges are sniping at us. He says, where from, we don't know, because he says, there's still the American airborne that took the bridge, he's still across the other side. And he says, also, he says, you'll find some riflemen on the bridge firing at mines coming down, because judges floating mines to try and, because the tried to blow the bridge, because it failed to do before. And he says, and he also says, there's a pontoon across. And so he says, but we know you'll be using the main bridge. So he says, I'm going to see it, and we did. And he hit that Bailey bridge, I think about nearly 70 miles an hour, and we flew through the air. And we landed all right, and then we get off without any other mishap. Nobody had fired off us, but we could hear the riflemen up in the bridge firing at the mines coming down the river. I think it was the River Wall, I think. And then we got across, and I think we got about half a mile across. And then because the rifle companies, I think, had gone across before us. And we ended up with in a farmhouse. Well, just off, because the bank side was all built up, like in Norfolk, you know, where Skegness is. It's about maybe we're about the 6 to 7, or more than that. But no, it was well above the high ground. The road was higher than the field side. So there was roads off, and we stopped at this farmhouse. And he says, he says, this was going to be the company headquarters. So the signal platoon eventually came up, like, and we got organised, like. And I think, myself, we didn't do telephone lines out, because we were more like in close circuit. They weren't very far out. And I think they weren't actually in the front line, because I think they were just taking all the of the Munigans. And then we just established, grow cells all established and that, and there's only one mishap, like, that somebody in this farmhouse, one of the houses there, they decided to do some cooking and they lit an open fire and set fire to the house. So, but there was a load of little pigs in it and all. So what happened to the little pig and all? And then plenty of mutton going around, plenty of pork.
Where were the Germans in relation to where you were?
Well, the Germans were more like in a wood. We couldn't understand there. And now then, what happened now? I tell the truth, it's very fake. I know we were in that position there. Then all of a sudden, they said they were going to do an advance. Because the company's formed up, and me, I had one line party, being another chap, and they were going to do an advance of like a two company frontal attack. Because another corporal got to go out with it, but what companies it were, I don't know. I think it was A and C company, I'm not quite sure. Like, and that was two companies I went with on the right, and they want to take this front positions in the wood, and then the others are going somewhere on. So we followed this company in, and we got pinned down once or twice by bullets. Like, we could hear them going over top of. So we took the ground, like, and then when it calmed down, we went forward again. But I was behind the company. Well, I was about maybe 100 yards behind the company HQ. Because she said I hadn't to go keep up with the company till they got in position. So we got into this so far, and then we come across a couple of wounded lads with the stretcher bearers, two stretcher bearers. And there's, this terrible happened there, because we got nicely settled down, and I tapped in and got back to the exchange and said we'd got so far, but the company hadn't established its headquarters yet. Then all of a sudden the stretcher bearer stood up and the sniper got him. Killed him straight dead. And then about 5 minutes later, about 10 juries come walking out. And this other stretcher bearer went mad. Like, I said, no, I says, settle down. I says, he says, whichever one of these had been a sniper, like, but he couldn't understand us. I says, no use trying. I says, you'll not understand. They'll not understand you. So we set forward. I says, right, what the two lads says, let's wait. So I says to the exchange, I said, we're moving on again. So we went further forward, and we come to this, like a little bit of a ditch, like, and there was a little bridge over it, and there was a house on the right. And the company commander, I can't remember his name, who he was, but he says, I'm making this my company HQ. So I says, right, all right, and I think we're about 30 yards short of Wiley. So I says, oh, crikey, now then. So I had a scrounge round, and I found this jury telephone line on the floor. On the ground, like, so I says, oh, we are, like, so I got me pliers and cut him, start pulling it, like, and it ended up by a jolly telephone on the end coming out of a barn further up the road. Then all of a sudden, there was another six or seven juries keeping their hands up. So they were sent back, like, and I said, oh, that's good, like. But I asked the company commander, and he says, well, he says, that other company hasn't come through yet. He says, I don't think they will, because I think it was just as far as we're going, like. Oh, I says, right, oh. So I reported the company in position, like, and I says, I'm returning, because I've got no cable left. So when I came back, like, he says, oh, you're not finished yet. I says, why? Like, I got back to the... He says, this other corporal had run away and left his two men. And...
So did you ever know his name?
I forget his name, no, but he was a reinforcement where he come from. He was a full corporal. Because I didn't like it, like, when I said that spoils me for promotion, like, when he came. But he was a big head, like, and I mean, like, but he'd come back and left. So I goes out and there was a jock lad, forgetting his name now, but he was a grand fella, lad. And he says, "Oh, I'm pleased you've come." So we got the line back into that, I didn't know what company that was. And that there again, that's where that company had stopped. And the other one hadn't gone through, they'd kept back in reserve, must have been. So I phoned in and I said, "There, it's up late." So when I rung the exchange up, he says, "I've got some good news for you." He said, "I'll tell you when you come back." So when he gets back, like, I reports in, like, and the signal officer says, "You've been promoted to full corporal." I says, "Oh, because I've lost the last corporal." Like, "Oh," I says, "how come?" Well, he says, "they say, oh, he's just stripped the other fella, him and his men."
So as company advances, and you were, say, you're about 100 yards behind them, you were reeling out your
wire.
And, what state were the German prisoners in that you were getting? Were they young men or
well,
men?
Well, tell the truth, I never took much notice of them. we took more notice of them when they were in Normandy, because a lot of that hit the youth. But we never took much notice of them, because we never really have had time, because all we do is the lads used to disarm them and send one chap back with them. And they were only come back in trickles and drabs, like the twos and threes. About six or seven came, and then they had this farm building. And there were mainly medical lads that came out this barn where I'd pulled the telephone. So we settled down there, and I can't remember how long we were there, but then we got orders to move, and we went up to Elst. Well, tell the truth, before we moved, I forgot we relieved the Americans. I think it was the 81st Airborne, I think, I'm not quite sure. And they dug some slit holes in there, and they said, "Here you are," and then, "that crates of carnation cream milk." I said, "What are you going to do with them?" "We said, we're going to leave them." So I said, "Oh, we're all right then." And there was a lot of care rations. They just up and left them. They'd had plenty of grub and everything, like. So we enjoyed ourselves there. We were getting the care rations. And then after this do, we moved. How we moved, I don't know. How we moved from there up to, into Elst. And well, how we come now? Into Elst village itself, the company Britannia HQ established itself there. Now, wait a minute, no. I think I'm ahead of myself, yes. We moved up into new positions, that right, and it was on the roughly near the Nijmegen Arnhem railway line. Because I always remember I run a line. We're in a farmhouse. This has a few houses before, and we're in this farmhouse, and we set the signal exchange up, like. So I run the line out to, I said, "Right, there's a line, there's a company across the railway," and they said, "No, be careful, because juries keep shoving bursts of spandau down the railway line." All of a sudden, they straight down the line, like. so starts goes out, like, and ends on drum, like, and because it was only a third of a mile on the drum of cable, and I'd done three, like. And I was phoned back, like, and I says, "No," I says, "I'm just about on the railway line, so what I'm going to do," I said, "instead of getting start another drum," I said, "I'm going to cross the line and thread it through through the railway line underneath." And I said, "We'll join it up here." So left one of the, leaves the phone on the end, like. And we laid down, and all of a sudden this burst of machine gun come down, like. So I said, "No, we'll wait, and we'll time it, like." So we laid down. It was high up the railway lines, because we were in the ditch. And then about another couple of minutes, it came again. So I said, "Right, we know what to do." So Well, I said, next time he has a burst, I said, we'll go across, we'll dive across. Well, I said, we'll crawl across like on our hands and knees. Because it's only a single line. So it burst again and up he went and over the top. And just get you over nice and there's another burst. So they must have spied us because it was dusk, see. Oh, I said, that's all right. No one else says, oh, we're going to get this across here. So he says, so the other bloke at the other end, like, he says, hey, he says, I've got some, some branches here. It's like a short tree, but they're like pea sticks, you know, long. He says, I said, right, I'll cut one down. I says, I'll shove one through, like. He says, but first of all, he says, I'll sling one over to you. He says, so he cut this one down, like. And he slung it across, and he got another one for himself, like. So what we did, we put a loop on, and I got the stick, and I shoved it underneath, pushing the wire through, like. I said, now, can you get out of that, like? He said, I think I can. He said, I feel so I whittled the stick up and down, and all of a sudden he started burst. Fire come down, like. They could see the traces coming down. They were just about 2 foot off the, 2 and 3 foot off the ground, you know. They weren't bouncing on the, but there they were. It must have been a fixed fire, because it's all the same. Like, trying to catch somebody crossing the railway line. So eventually, he's pushed and pushed, like. Then I said, no, right, or so. I said, no, can you save mine? He says, well, I think I can, like. So he was trying to put, he took it only 10 minutes. And eventually he got out of it, like, and pulled my stick through as well. So I says, right, or I says, we'll rail it off. So I says, right, or I says, go and join it up. I says, you stop there and join it up. And, I says, we'll want the telephone. Oh, crikey, like. So we waited another burst of that, and he told the exchange that we were disconnecting, like, because we were going to join further on, like. So we disconnected, and all of a sudden, after the burst, we went to meet each other, see, and I grabbed him and went straight back, like. So I said, join it up, like, and I said, make sure it's insulated well, because I said, it was damp ground, wet ground, you know. So we set off reeling it back again, like, and I come across some blokes in the slip train. I said, where's your company at school, like? This is in that farmhouse, he's in the cellar there. And so I says, right, all right. So I goes to the farm, like, and I opens the door, and I says, anybody here? And a voice come up and he says, bah, he says, I know that voice. I said, I know that voice, and that was Major Crosswaite. I'd never seen him for a long time. He says, I knew it was your voice, Bateman. Oh, he says, I'm pleased to see you, huh? So, talking a while, like, he says, oh, you come to be with the 9th Battalion. Of course, he hadn't been long with the, I didn't know what company, I think it was a big company, I think he was with her, I'm not quite sure. But tell us, and then we get them all fixed up, like, and then we trots back to the railway line and wait again, because it's dark then. And down come these trace of bullets again, and then over the top we went. And then they got back to HQ, like, and then I think it was the next day. We set out to survey. Well, we couldn't find a company to get a line to, so I says, oh, we're going out to see how far much we want, like, because we were well away. And, I was there 2 days. We found the company, like, but we couldn't get back, because the jury was mortaring and everything, like, we dug in the hedge back, like. So, eventually got back, like, and then we got a line to them, like. And that's when we lost the Setney command. He'd just come, I think, I don't know, the day before, or a couple of them. But he went up, and we told him to keep well into the hedge back, into the dug side, because Jerry was shooting down the road then. as well sometime. And next thing we knew, we found him being shot, being machine gunned. He died, he was wounded late, but he died of wounds eventually. I've forgotten, I don't know what his name was. He said, by here, he didn't last very long, did he? So, after that, there wasn't much to do. I think it was more like a defensive there. And then all of a sudden, we said, we're going to withdraw back into Elst itself. And we got into a house and we didn't stick it. Did we put an exchange, any telephone? I don't think we did put any telephone line, because we stopped there about 3 years. And that's when we got a new set of battle dress.
Did that differ from what you'd been used to?
It was the same sort of battle dress, because this was our first change. Mm. And what was the first change? We didn't get a wallet. Be here. We put our old khaki back on. And then we...
Did you get involved at all?
Wait a minute. I've gone too far now. We're somewhere else. We were somewhere, and then they says there's some leave coming up. So did you want to go? So I says, there's some leave. Like, so I'm going to get me 5 days leave in Brussels. Where the battalion was, I can't remember now. I know we went back to B Echelon. I've got all kitted out with new khaki. That was after, as before, we went back to Elst, that's right. And then we went to Brussels, we got some Belgian money, went that 5 days in Brussels. The RSM took us in a truck.
What were you doing in Brussels?
Well, just mucking around, going to cinemas. We got booked in a hotel there. And went round the cafes and everything. And the women, they were all right. The women were all right. And horses, all sheets. And we had a bath at B Echelon there, in Nijmegen itself. But where it was in Nijmegen, I don't know. But now it was a great big building, looked like a big school. So we got all khakied out. So we drove down to Brussels, like, in this night, going to Brussels, like. So we spent the 5 days there. All the nationalities were there. There was the Canadians, there was the Polish, the Belgians, the Dutch was there, the Canadians. The Canadians had loads of money, and they had, I think, foreign money. And there were, I think, these thousand bills, you know. I didn't know whether they were German or what, but they were asking us to exchange, because I says, why, like? They said, well, we're only allowed to change one. And for spot money, because they said they only allow us to change 1,000 back into Belgium, which is this exchange place in a church it was. Well, I says, I don't know. What I says to one of the lads who were me, like, what do you think? Well, I said, we can chance it, like. So I says, right, or they broke, like. I said, I'll take a chance. And so I goes, and there's notes there, a great change. And he gave us half of it, the Canadian. I've forgotten now what it was. I don't know whether it was 1,000 German mark or what it was. But now it was 1,001. And we enjoyed ourselves, the rest, like. So the days came, we had to go back. The hotel was lovely. A nice soft bed, a single bed. There was four of us in a room. And plenty of women there. Oh, they were keen on us, mate. So, because we'd never drawn much pay then, it says, we had loads of money in credit. Because we never had nothing to spend it on, because you got your rations brought up, you got your free cigarettes, and in these, the key rations, you know, there was tins of cigarettes in them, and the sweets you wanted.
Do you recall what your pay was as a corporal?
I think it was 3 and 9, I think. Or was it? I can't remember. No, it was 4 and somewhat. But I wasn't saying, the trouble is, I had to go 3 months before I got really established. Tell you
was
that.
Was there much trouble in Brussels amongst the various
places? No, there was no. Did it tell the truth? It was lovely there. The bars was all right. And there wasn't much drink. It was more like wine. There wasn't much beer, like. And but we just said, oh, we'll have a good rest, like. But yeah, the rosters was open through the day and so, and then we stopped at home at the hotel at night. There was a radio. There was a radio in the... We could listen to the radio. Then we had a formed up to say, right, oh, we're going, I think we're going to set off at 5 o'clock at night. And the RSM collectors all together from this hotel, we're all in this hotel. There's only, I think, 10 of us in this wagon. And we set off there and he got lost. And we travelled there and all of a sudden he stopped and there was a young woman in the road and she was thumbing the lift. Like, he says, where do you want to go? Like, well, she says, I want to be up into Nijmegen, like. We got horses, we were going up that way, like. So he pushed her in the back, like. And I said, do you want a cushion? The bloke says to me, he says, you want a cushion? Belgium's a kiss. That's someone's cushion. I said, I didn't know. So I give her a cushion to sit on, like. She was a lass about 28. Took name what you know. And we got travelling on there. I said, where the hell are we at now, like? And all of a sudden, we stopped no among the bloody Americans. And the answer, I just, I don't know, he says, I think I'm lost. So we got directions, like, we travelled on a bit longer, like, we did, we ended up in Nijmegen. And we had to go across the bridge again. And they were in reserve. The battalion was in reserve. Somewhere in the, so, and then that's when we moved up in Delft, and then that's what happened. I went up to this, and then we in Delft village itself, and then we got all of a sudden. I got a letter from the missus, like, and she says, I've been had my fortune told, and she says, I'm going to see you for Christmas. So I said to one, well, there was another full cop. What was his name there? It was a butcher in Civvy Street. And he says, boy, she's been kidding your missus, hasn't she? So about a fortnight later, here come, word come, he says, you're going home. He says, you've been selected to go home. He says, you're going to go with the transfer to the 6th Battalion. I says, no. He says, yes. And
had the division been broken up then?
We started then, because I said, get away, they can't, like. So we moved back into Nijmegen, into this mission place again. And he says, right, oh, get your, all your kit ready. He says, the 9th Battalion's been transferred into the 7th Armoured. You're going to be the Desert Rat. And he says, the rest of the brigade is going back to Popperinge. Oh, right. So we collected all our gear together, and next morning we formed up these trucks, and we drove all the way back to Popperinge. How long it took us, I don't know. But we go get back into Popperinge, and we got billeted in civilian houses, and then we sorted ourselves out, like.
Was that with Belgian families?
Belgian families, there was a lot of young lads, see, they had to, I don't know why they sent us, there was a lot of young reinforcements that come, and they were there with the 6th Battalion, but I think the 9th Battalion had had enough, they'd been reinforced, and they sent all these young lads with the 6th Battalion back, and we got into Popperinge. And set up there, and then I got called to the company office, like, and they says, we a full corporal surplus. He says, you were not established, it hadn't been 3 months, so you'll have to revert to corporal private. I says, all right, well, I don't mind, like. So I reverted to private soldiers. I says, oh, I'm happy now, I can go. The 6th Battalion wasn't so fussy on NCOs associated with it. I don't think they were, like, because I was always a private soldier, like. So we had a good time there. And that was when a mate of mine, he was in the Royal Akak Artillery, Light Akak, up in outside of Dunkirk. So I says, I wonder if I can get a message to him, because his wife had wrote, Dennis, and started telling him that he'd been sent over there. He was in the intelligent section. So I was one day, there was an artillery donor in the order room. Oh, I says, yeah, donor, Jack Pratt. I says, are you from that light attack place? He says, I says, Jack Pratt, that's in the intelligence. Well, he says, I know him, he's a Lance Corporal, Lance Bombardier. I said, will you tell him his mate, Bill Bateman's down here in the term line? Right. So next day he comes down on this 7 day an hour. So I had a good natter, like. Because I'd never seen him since I left England, like. Well, I'd never seen him. No, I hadn't seen him at all. Because he was in the artillery when I came home. Because I didn't go up to Richburn.